I cannot tell right now. It's not close enough. It looks like it's going to be about a mile and a half to the south of Highway 70. There is definitely a huge lowering with this storm now. A huge lowering on it. I cannot tell how fast it's rotating or if it's rotating at all. I'm going to assume at this point that there's definite rotation with it. I just can't tell you how fast it is.
This is Local Talk, where we look at the people, the stories, and the events of Central Iowa. And today, we are looking at emergency safety. I'm your host today, Ursula Rudenberg, with my co-host,
Don Wirth, and we're going to be talking with emergency managers from Hamilton County, Story County, from Boone County, and ISU, as they talk about the efforts that they go through to help get us, the citizens of this area, prepared for any emergencies that may arise.
This is National Emergency Preparedness Month, and as I understand it, this is a month that was declared by FEMA, which is the Federal Emergency Management Agency, which is a part of the Department of Homeland Security.
And our guest that will be talking about that next will be Keith Morgan, the coordinator of the Story County Emergency Management Office.
Thank you. Appreciate the opportunity to talk about this. Keith Morgan from Story County Emergency Management. You can contact me at 515-382-7315 or kmorgan@storycounty.com if you have any questions on anything that we discuss today.
It's been discovered that 50% of Americans do not have any supplies set aside for an emergency, and only 44% of Americans have any sort of household emergency plan.
This is a critical aspect of preparedness, because it's important that we take care of ourselves, because during those first few hours and even upwards of the first few days, we've got to rely on ourselves and we've got to rely on each other, our neighbors, so that we can react to whatever disaster might occur. You need to involve all your family members so that they know what the plan is. And one of the first things a lot of people don't think about is they do think about, if I'm going to be in the home, what am I going to do? But what if you're separated? What if you have children that are at school? What if you are at work? How are you going to, first off, make that very critical contact? So one of the first things that we advise is to have a plan with a contact data for somebody that is outside of the state, because grandma, grandpa, if they're living outside of the town that you're in, have everybody know to give them a call and let them know that you're okay, where you're at, because this, again, will help the overall process to account for everybody. Landlines actually may be more dependable in a situation. Cell phones tend to get overtaxed in an emergency situation. One of the things that they have found is that text messages will get through, whereas an actual phone call will not.
What supply should people have available?
One of the first things is plan on 3 days. So whatever it takes for you to get by for 3 days is important. Obviously, water is a critical part of that, and you should plan on at least 1 gallon for each person for each day. So that's for a three-day kit is 3 gallons per person. Some of the other stuff that people don't think about is if you're on any sorts of medications, make sure that you have a sufficient supply of that medication to get you through a three-day supply on that. Another item that people don't think about is spare cash, because if the overall system, if the internet is down and like that, you won't be able to go to the ATM and withdraw cash. So you're going to need some cash to get you through those first few days after you get out of the area that's been in the disaster area. A radio. Having a radio to be able to listen to the instructions, because one of the most important things that we've got to ask is that people be listening for instructions and follow those instructions when we're trying to provide you direction to get you to the safest area possible. Another thing people don't think about is their pets. Do you have pet food and supplies for your pets for 3 days also? Sanitary items, if you're stuck in your house, will you be able to dispose of waste in a sanitary manner? Those are some of the items. The Red Cross has got a more extensive list on their website. FEMA has got a very good list of those items that go beyond that. Flashlights, think about your children. Have something so that they can have something to occupy their time and help reduce some of that anxiety that's being created by the situation. The main thing is you have to put this together in the first place, and things like food and water and prescriptions, once a year during September, revisit what you've got for a preparedness kit and make sure that you refresh the medical supplies and the food supplies. Make it a game for the kids that tonight's the disaster night and we're going to eat the food out of our disaster kit and replenish it for the next year.
A kit is what? It's a box? It's a basket in the house somewhere?
It can be a box, a basket. We recommend that it is something that can be waterproof in case the disaster compromises the ability of your house to resist the water or it's flooding or something like that. It's got to be something that you can get to. Don't bury it so deeply in the house that after the disaster strikes, you can't get to it. Have it at a place that's readily accessible. And again, the more you can seal it up, the more you're going to be sure that the supplies inside of it are going to be in good shape when you need them. But if you had less time, do you at least have a backpack, again, that has vital documents in it, prescriptions, glasses, so that you don't have to wear your contacts for 72 hours straight? And that needs to be right by the front door so you can grab it on your way out.
What types of disasters might be specific to our area and the type of advance notice that we might get on those types of disasters?
A winter storm coming that you can see is going to possibly knock out the power, you can stock up your supplies for that. Then we get to what we typically have in Story County here, which is rapid flooding, bordering on flash flooding. We still get hours of notification. It can come on down to, obviously, tornadoes and straight-line winds that can be devastating. There you may have 20 minutes. You may be able to look at the forecast and say it's likely during this time frame, but the actual notification is now down to minutes. Or it can be all the way down to hazardous material situation where there's been a release and you have to grab and go within a matter of minutes. So that will drive what you have. Again, the supplies for it won't vary dramatically on that. If you've got that kit and you have time to grab it and it's got 3 days supply and you can throw it into your car, then you'll be better off. If you get to a place that has more supplies, you can just leave that. But that grab-and-go kit that has vital documents and prescriptions and contact information, that's the one that's going to be key. Another thing that I would encourage folks to look at is look through your neighborhoods. Build from just looking out for your family. Start building that whole community concept of if you have a neighbor that has some special needs, may have difficulty hearing, or is not as mobile as you are. If you have time, as you're dealing with the situation, go next door, check on them, get to know them so they're comfortable with you. We can take care of ourselves. There is less and less funding available at the federal level to take care of us. We have got to become much more independent and locally take care of neighbors, taking care of each other. Another aspect of this is the volunteer organizations that we have. Volunteering for the Red Cross, Salvation Army, retired and senior volunteer program. All of these programs need people to be trained beforehand to be able to help us rapidly set up a structure to care for those that are in the disaster area. We have great volunteerism here in Iowa. The day of, we really need this kind of support, a good cadre and nucleus of people that are trained in how to react to these disaster situations to take care and set up the structure for those that are in the disaster area.
You talked about vital documents. What would be included in a quick list of those?
Stuff that is difficult to replace. Birth certificates, marriage certificates, your insurance policy. Who are you going to call? What was on your insurance policy? How do you have to contact them? Make sure that you have that. Nowadays in this electronic world, a great way to do it is to copy as much as that as you possibly can, send it to a friend that is not in that local area so that if the disaster occurs, you can always get a hold of them and have them send it to you. Keep it on a thumb drive in that grab-and-go kit so that you can have it later to reference instead of having that old box of documents. Now you can keep as much as you want on something like that and have it as a reference. It's Social Security cards to make sure that you have something that you can take into the Social Security office and say, this is what I had and this is what I need to replace. Credit card numbers, credit card contact information so that you can, again, reestablish contact with any financial agency that if your house has been damaged to the point where you won't be living in it for a long time, you can contact them and give them a new place to send that information. Having good insurance is another one of those preparedness issues. Have that insurance to be able to get yourself at least up to the point where you have the basics to get by. Don't rely on FEMA being there to rebuild your house, because if it's not a presidential disaster declaration, you're going to have to rely on your resources.
What type of exercises do you create in terms of emergency management?
We have done exercises using all the entities around here, the agencies. We've done some with the USDA. Iowa State has been a great partner in doing exercises and trying to draw as many of the different agencies. After 9/11, one of the most important things that they realized is getting agencies that are used to working on their own together. So we try and make it so that it involves our medical response, it involves our fire and our police, and bringing them all together so that they have to work. And each of us has got a little bit of a language that's a little bit different, and the more that we work together, the better off we are. So we may sit down and just talk through a plan one time. The next time, we'll exercise one small part of that plan, and the process builds to where you have a large-scale exercise at least once every 5 years. The Iowa Department of Public Health is encouraging what they call medical coalitions to come together. And they're the lead on this planning part of it, but they have invited us along as a part of the process to develop these medical coalitions. So the partnership involved both us, public health, our hospitals, emergency management, all coming together to try and determine what's the best way to try and work together to increase our capabilities where it'll do the most good for the citizens of our county and for the state in general.
So this crosses county lines?
Definitely does. Right now, the resources that it takes to be prepared for all hazards, looking across all the different possibilities, is just too much, even for a large county like Polk County to take on their own. So we have what we call mutual aid agreements, both within the counties where fire departments will come to the aid of each other, and it makes sense to do that. Our medical system we exceed the capabilities here, we are definitely going to be sending some of our patients out to the other counties. So this is part of that, to be able to have a good common basis of understanding on how we would do that. Just as I discussed that, you know, we put together plans and we exercise our plans, I encourage everybody else, especially in a family situation, to practice their plan. Quiz them, you're at school and this happens, what would you do? You're in the house. We're not here, and you hear the sirens go off. What would you do? Have them take it all the way through to the disaster actually happens, and you just walk out, and there's not much left of your house. What are you going to do from that point on? If they haven't thought through it, you having the plan in your mind is helpful if you're going to be there to be able to execute it. But make sure everybody's got the plan and that they know how to make it happen.
We often hear about the big news items, emergencies, tornadoes, floods, and such. But what, from your experience, might be a smaller type of emergency that might have a impact on maybe only one or two families that you've had to deal with in the past few years?
One instance was we have had an instance where there's been a natural gas leak within a community, and we were assisting them by helping them with sheltering of those residents that had been displaced and putting on standby agencies to come in, and should long-term sheltering be needed, we had agencies that were ready to go if we needed to do that. And it boiled down to we only needed to take care of one family, and the Red Cross was able to help out that particular family and community. We helped facilitate the media part of that, getting the information out as to what had happened. And as the disaster was transitioning to what we call a recovery phase, where we were trying to get the residents back into their homes, we were helped facilitate information on who to contact to get your gas turned back on after they had taken care of the situation. So that's one example. There was an apartment fire down here in Ames that, again, many of the different volunteer community agencies came together, the Salvation Army, RSVP, the American Red Cross, United Way, all came together and worked with the first responders, the police and the fire to make sure that the residents were taken care of both short-term and long-term. So
the examples that you gave really emphasize the need for that grab-and-go bag, because you don't get much notice on a natural gas leak or an apartment fire. So when you get that notice, you really have to have that preparedness kit ready to grab on your way out the door.
Exactly. It's obviously, we don't want anybody to delay to gather this stuff up, which would put them at risk. But if it's right by the door as you're going on out, that's what we need you to have so that we can make it so that we're protecting your life as quickly as possible, but also to minimize the impact on you.
If you own a business or run an organization, what kind of information should you know?
FEMA and our office will gladly work with any of the businesses to help them develop a business continuity plan. And this is one of the most critical things that we're trying to stress across Story County. We definitely want to take care of our citizens, and we want to take care of our businesses, because we want the community to come back as quickly as possible. And a key aspect of that is the businesses coming back as quickly as possible to be able to provide the jobs back to the people as quickly as we possibly can, because that's what recovery is all about. So they need to be able to identify the most important things out of their resources, protect them, do risk management to be able to expend the time and effort to be able to bounce back as quickly as possible.
Okay, so a tornado is coming your way. What do you do?
Well, the first thing that we hope is that you've got a weather radio that will notify you that there is a tornado coming. This is probably the biggest safety issue that we can have. People think of outdoor warning sirens as being their notification that tornado is coming. We absolutely have got to stress that everybody needs to have that weather radio. When it goes off, the first thing you need to do is treat each of these alerts as it's coming for your house. So immediately have already looked at your house. Try and find the safest place. And each house is going to be a little bit different. But obviously, if you have a basement, they recommend the basement and an area that has some structural solidness around it, stairways and like that, to go down there and to make sure that you're safe.
Is it true that you want to go to the southwest corner of the basement?
I actually can't tell you. I've heard different ones. I don't have any definitive statistical data to say that that's the most important thing. The most important thing is to ensure that you have good structure around you to make sure that you're safe. So, again, stairs tend to have larger wooden structures above them to protect you.
What if you're in a car?
If you're in a car, first off, don't try and outrun it is definitely one of the things. They recommend that you get out of the car and that you go lay in a low-lying area. They do not recommend actually going for underpasses because they can almost create a suction effect. But get out of the car, go lay down, and cover your head, obviously.
And is it true that you want to stay away from glass?
Glass is one of the greatest hazards that's in any structure. That's why they recommend an internal room to go to, one that doesn't have windows, because that glass will fracture and it becomes many knives flying through the air. So try and get in there. If there's something that you can take along to pad around you, if you can pull a mattress over top of you, adds just another layer of protection for you.
How do you tell the difference between a practice siren and a real tornado siren?
Your community will tend to have specific times that they test their tornado siren. So check and know when that is. If you don't know, treat it like it's the real thing. Most communities around here, if the weather is threatening, will not run a practice siren.
Well, before we end, can you just tell us a little bit about the people who are the first responders? If there's an emergency, where do they come from?
Obviously, here in Story County, we go all the way from a fairly major metropolitan area here in Ames that has full-time police and full-time fire. As you move out into the rural areas, your next-door neighbor is probably the person you're going to see show up if there's a disaster. These are volunteers that are giving an awful lot of themselves, and they're very, very professional. Our offices are going to maybe be out in the field or maybe be back at the Story County Administrative Building trying to provide that connectivity to the other agencies and getting the resources for those first responders. After you get past those first responders, then you're going to see the volunteer organizations, Red Cross, Salvation Army, folks from the United Way, RSVP, until it's such time that you can transition to supporting yourself. Then 24 to 72 hours, we might see some state assistance coming on in, and then after the 72 hours, if it's large enough, you may see FEMA and Department of Homeland Security coming in with resources. But we've got a great network here in Iowa. I would anticipate that we'll see a much greater response of volunteers than we would ever be able to fully and effectively use. If it's a large-scale disaster, we will probably be setting up a place where these volunteers can show up, and we register them because that's important. We give them some safety briefings so that they're safe out in the field, and we try and utilize them in the best way that we possibly can, and we'll try and draw upon their skills. A thing that I've got to emphasize is we need folks to volunteer before the disaster because there's certain skills that we have got to get you trained on. I encourage folks to contact our office, Story County Emergency Management. We're on the Story County webpage. If you have a desire to volunteer, and we'll hook you up in an interest, whether it be debris removal, volunteer management, and try and get you linked in. Another key aspect is people often want to volunteer by providing things. Many times that actually creates more work for us because we have to sort through all of that stuff. We will work to try and set up somehow so that cash donations can be worked because we oftentimes can multiply that $1 into multiple dollars if we can work with some of our business partners to get stuff at cost. It will come in a format that allows us to distribute it much easier, and we'll be able to buy the things that we need right then at that moment to take care of the situations.
Could you please give again the website where people can go to volunteer?
To contact our offices, go to the Story County website. Just Google it. You'll get it. Emergency Management or a department that's listed under the website. And my email address, kmorgan@storycountyoneword.com will be on there. Just express to us where you're at, what kind of volunteering you're interested in, and we'll try and get you hooked up. Where there's medical, there's just a whole spectrum of things working with animals. Again, taking care of pets is an important part of the overall structure. So if you've got a desire to volunteer, there's probably a place where we can fit you in.
And is this website also where you can find lists for preparing?
The FEMA website is the best place to go to. Google FEMA, go to the FEMA website, and they have one drop-down menu that's preparedness, and that will help get you the information that you need.
We've been talking with Keith Morgan about emergency preparedness. I want to thank Keith for coming in and speaking with us today.
Thank you for this opportunity.
have one of our volunteer reporters, Cynthia McClure, with us.
Hello.
Hi, Cynthia, and you've been doing a lot of research on this topic.
Yeah, I have went and contacted quite a few emergency management coordinators and directors in our service area.
Today you have here in the studio with us Captain Van Rijswijk.
Captain Van Rijswijk is a patrol division at ISU, and he is a first responder for the Iowa State University campus.
Welcome.
Thank you. I am the commander for the patrol division. My rank is captain. I've been with ISU Police for about 15 years. The patrol division would be the marked squad cars, the officers that wear uniforms that we see that are very conspicuous on a daily basis. I manage that unit, ensuring that the officers have the necessary equipment and training they have to be able to respond to emergencies.
You work together with the Ames City Police?
Absolutely, yes, on a daily basis.
A lot of what I understand the emergency preparedness is looking at is weather-related issues, national disasters, terrorist activities. What kind of preparations or plans does Iowa State have for those situations?
Several. To begin with, the first question there, weather preparedness. Several of the buildings on campus are storm-rated shelters. So whenever we enter a storm watch, then our beat officers know which buildings in their area are to be unlocked or remain unlocked. Certainly if there's a warning, then we make sure that those buildings are unlocked and that the signage is appropriate, that people can find their way to those. And that would be one thing that listeners would want to make sure that they're aware of if they're coming to the Iowa State University campus, that they take the moment to peruse the ISU website and make themselves aware of where a storm shelter is. If you go to the Iowa State University site at iastate.edu, and there's a search bar. If you type in storm shelter, it will take you to the appropriate link.
Could you repeat that again?
At iastate.edu, there's a search bar, and if you type in storm shelter and hit search, it will take you to the appropriate link to be able to identify which buildings are storm shelters on the ISU campus. We're going back through and re-identifying an emergency action plan for the entire university to cover a myriad of different occurrences, whether it be weather or chemical spill in a lab or a fire. I mean, if a tornado hit campus, if we have another flood, electrical outage, if there's a bomb threat or a terrorist activity or an active shooter. Those are all things that the university has to have a contingency plan.
And how are students generally notified of this?
If there's an emergency on campus, Iowa State University has an alert system called ISU Alert, an emergency notification, and we reserve those for extreme situations.
And how do you send it out?
The system actually sends out via three methods. One is a text message, which sends out very quickly, and it can batch process those very fast. The second one is an email, and it can process those relatively quickly, though it is slower than a text message. And the last one is a voice message that is a pre-recorded message, and it calls phone numbers. Students, faculty, or staff can sign up for ISU Alert through Access Plus on the Iowa State website. We strongly encourage students to sign up, faculty and staff to sign up.
For information, say in an emergency, mm-hmm. Is there a number where they can call?
Well, there's two. They could try to call ISU Police, our non-emergency line, which is 515-294-4428.
That's 294-4428.
Correct. Now, the challenge is, if it were a campus-wide emergency, that phone number is going to be very, very busy. The university actually, in an emergency, they preempt our website, and if you go to iastate.edu, that front site will give information directly related to the emergency, as well as there's a phone system that the number comes up at that point, and a person could call, and it would give real-time information as it's uploaded to the system.
So the best thing to do would be to go to
iastate.edu,
and the homepage will give emergency information.
Yes, and we update it through that. Same was true for the power outage. I cannot remember now. It was a big day, but it was either the beginning of July or the end of June when we lost power for that period of time.
Do you see any special problems in the future?
For emergency preparedness, honestly, the emergency that we see probably that is the easiest to prevent right now are car crashes due to texting And again, this is just a reminder, please don't text and drive. There's so much, you know, don't surf the internet, don't check your email, leave your phone off, and when you get where you're going, then check your messages or reply.
Thank you so much for coming. Really
sure.
appreciate it.
It's my pleasure.
Yeah.
We've been talking with Captain Darren Van Ryswick of Iowa State University Police. He is a patrol division captain.
Correct. It's good coffee. Thank you.
This is KHOI, and you're listening to Local Talk, a program where we talk about the people, the stories, and the events in Story County. And this week, we're speaking about National Emergency Preparedness Month. And once again, we're here with Cynthia McClure, who is a volunteer reporter at KHOI. And Cynthia, you've been speaking with other counties within the KHOI listening area, as well as Story County.
Yes, KHOI's listening area also includes Boone, Hamilton, Hardin, Marshall, and Polk counties. That is why we call KHOI the heart of Iowa. National Weather Service Des Moines is responsible for issuing severe weather and flash flood warnings for 51 Iowa counties in the central Iowa area. The Des Moines office area covers essentially the central half of the state. Des Moines Weather Forecast Office also maintains an amateur radio station on site. During periods of severe weather, the National Weather Service also activates this station, and trained Skywarn operators are requested to operate the Skywarn station. Skywarn is a volunteer program run by the National Weather Service to receive reports of severe weather from the public for the purpose of advising the public about impending danger due to severe thunderstorms, tornadoes, floods, and other hazardous weather conditions.
And you had an opportunity to speak with an amateur radio coordinator recently as well.
Yes, amateur radio operators play a big role in safety in central Iowa, and I was fortunate enough to get an interview with Clint Miller, who is also the emergency coordinator for amateur radio. In an emergency, how do you serve the community, and what do you do?
Amateur radio operators are a licensed group of volunteers that provide backup communication support to our served agencies. Primary served agency would be the Story County Emergency Management. I am the coordinator for the local Story County HAMs, or amateur radio operators. And so I work with the local authorities like the mayors and the county emergency managers and the fire departments to basically coordinate our volunteer resources, make sure everyone has training and the credentials they need so that in an emergency, we can schedule people to go in and provide communication support, whether it be on our amateur radio frequencies or just supplement on their radio equipment. When all else fails, we use whatever equipment is available. We've been known to pick up the telephone. If it's working, we can just act as communicators in the normal system just because they might be short on help. We do a lot of individual welfare and safe and well messages through the Red Cross and welfare checks to say, I need to get a message out to my family that I am safe, I survived the disaster, I am currently staying in a shelter.
Can you give us an example of how the service has helped someone?
We have provided communication support in the last year in Japan after the tsunami and earthquakes. Down in Missouri when they had the tornadoes, amateurs were sent in down there to provide communication support. Usually after a disaster, they have a lot of systems go down, either with overwhelming or the actual disaster takes out the communication system, and so we can go in and supplement. We don't need infrastructure to operate. We can go direct between radios across town or around the world.
When, say, Hurricane Katrina happened, it was ham radio operators that...
Yeah, there was a big amateur radio response to that. We had amateurs at all of the important sites. We were receiving messages from around the country. Sometimes with the system so overwhelmed during Katrina, you could call long distance, but you couldn't call local. So you would call maybe Oklahoma and get a 911 dispatcher, and we had an amateur radio operator who would call someone across the country who would relay that message back to New Orleans to say that this family is trapped in their home, and they would dispatch a rescuer.
So you're a very highly organized group of people.
Yes, we have thousands of amateurs around the country, and we practice regular nets. We have a regular Sunday night net here in Story County. We have statewide nets, nationwide nets, so we can pass messages anywhere at any time.
So what does this service mean to you, doing this for people?
I enjoy helping people out. I have a lot of interest in personal preparedness, and I just like to be able to step in and provide a service to the county when it's needed. I've learned that our communication systems in this country are great when they work, but when they fail, it's a way to take a disaster into a real crisis in a hurry. Things can get overwhelmed. Even in Story County, when the school lets out because of a winter storm, we'll have cell phone delays and the internet will slow down because all the kids getting out of school and getting on their cell phones and the internet. So our systems aren't as robust as everyone thinks. And so I think it's important that we know that there are backup plans in place to communicate.
How can people get involved and help with this?
We're always looking for new amateur radio operators. You don't have to have a lot of technical experience. You just basically have to pass a simple test for the FCC to get your license. There's a small testing fee. There's a lot of books and stuff on the internet. There's no Morse code anymore, so you don't have to learn that. So you just study up in a week maybe in your free time and take a test, and it's not that difficult. You can get a basic license to allow you to use the local repeaters and talk to people around central Iowa. We also have our repeaters linked through the internet. We don't have to use infrastructure, but we do. So you can use repeaters to talk all over the world because they use the internet to pop up. So I can use the repeater here locally to talk to someone in California. Amateurs are bouncing signals off the moon. We have our own amateur radio satellites that we send signals through.
So what kind of people get involved in this? This sounds very huge and global and kind of underground in a way.
Yep. There are several million amateur radio operators in the world, over 700,000 in the United States. We have anywhere from engineers and electrical engineering all the way down to kids that are young teens and lower can get their license. There's no age limit. It's a way to communicate around the world. We still use Morse code, but that's not a requirement. Some people use a lot of digital modes, and they actually type out their messages on the keyboards.
Is there anything that you'd like to share with our listeners regarding Emergency Preparedness Month? Any special concerns that you think they should know about?
I would encourage everyone to know that they need to have ownership in their own communications plan and have their own system in place, because the government can't be relied on to do everything for everyone immediately. And so you need to have your own water supply and food and family plan and exercise those plans and be prepared, because I think Katrina taught us that when the worst happens, it might be a few days before the rescuers can get to you.
How long has this been around?
Amateur radio has been around for over 100 years. Wireless transmissions were on the Titanic, and that's how they called the rescue ship to come in and save the people that they did get. And that's about the time that wireless communications really took off. After World War II, there was a lot of surplus radio equipment out there, and so then a lot of people were able to buy that equipment, and they had experience being veterans communicating during the war, and so it really took off after the war because of those reasons.
I'm speaking with Clint Miller, the Emergency Coordinator for Amateur Radio Emergency Services, Story County, Iowa. If you'd like to get in touch with him, you can reach him at 515-292-1066. That's 292-1066. Or you can reach him at...
It's KC0JUO@ARRL.net. And ARRL is the Amateur Radio Relay League, and it's our voice for amateur radio. It's our organization that a lot of people belong to in the United States. They organize the Amateur Radio Emergency Service on a national level, so we are coordinated nationally by the ARRL, and we have signed memorandums of understanding nationwide with different organizations to provide support.
So if you would like to join this group, you can reach them at kc0juo@aarl.net.
That is my email address.
That is his email address if you'd like to get involved with amateur radio. And thank you for your time.
Thank you.
I also spoke with Hamilton County Emergency Services Director Phil Queen. He told me that RAGBRAI requires emergency services. The following is an excerpt from an interview I was able to record with him.
I am a former Marine, and once I got out of the Marine Corps. I got into law enforcement, which I currently do full-time. I've been a law enforcement officer since the end of 1999, and I've become familiar with the job as emergency management coordinator and some of the duties, and I thought that I would be a good fit, and I started this job with Hamilton County in March of 2011. My focus would be to inform the citizens, and also now that I'm finished with RAGBRAI, we're going to be doing quite a bit more training.
What were some of the problems that you had? RAGBRAI is a huge event here in Iowa.
It wasn't problems per se. It was when you're planning for all of the aspects that come along with 20,000 people that are not from your town, that are staying in your town, there's a lot of problems potentially there. So,
are you talking like even just sanitation and water?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, or the lack of. You know, during that time, we were very concerned with the drought, with the heat. Heat was a major factor. Where are all of those people going to be going, you know, with heat exhaustion, heat stroke, that type of thing? Are we going to have enough EMS personnel? Are we going to have enough law enforcement for that many people? I had found that in the community in rural Iowa, which is one of the reasons why I'm still here, is everybody came together, and it was great. I mean, it was very amazing to see that many people that came together to assist. And to the best of my knowledge, I believe that for the most part, a lot of the people had a great time here.
So you had a lot of volunteers really willing
yes.
to help during that. That, I would say, stressful time.
Oh, there were some very stressful situations as far as, you know, trying to get the information out there and trying to explain to people this is the way it should be done. And this was a very new situation to me. I hadn't done this ever.
So what have you learned from this job that you didn't know as a police officer before?
It's an entirely different job. Emergency management is not a first responder like EMS, fire, police. Once something happens, I am able to get the resources to assist on them doing their jobs.
You coordinate the resources for everyone, and you
Correct.
Organize where it should go to make it more efficient.
Correct.
How do you like your job?
If I didn't find it challenging, I probably wouldn't do it. I do have a website with numerous different links on there. It's HamiltonCounty.org.
So HamiltonCounty.org, and there are links to emergency management you can click on.
Right, that's correct.
And you can also reach him at his email, which is pqueen@HamiltonCounty.org, or there's a phone number at 515-835-8964. That's 515-835-8964.
Yes.
Well, I've been talking with Phil Queen. He's the Hamilton County Emergency Management Coordinator. And if you would like to get a hold of him, you can reach him at HamiltonCounty.org. He has links there, or also at pqueen@HamiltonCounty.org. Or the phone number is 515-835-8964. Thank you for your time, sir.
Thank you.
This is Ursula Rudenberg on Local Talk with volunteer reporter Cynthia McClure at KHOI. And I've learned a lot from these emergency coordinators and the interviews you've had with them. It's interesting how often police officers end up being the ones to pick up the responsibility and the work for emergency preparedness. And it's really a whole different job from police work. Phil also reinforced again, as did many of the other people we spoke with, how communication and cooperation between regions and profession plays a key role in safety during emergencies.
That's really true. A really interesting interview I had was with Dave Moreland, the Boone County Emergency Management Coordinator. He went as so far as to describe how they bought a mobile unit, an emergency services unit, that is used to coordinate all these services.
Okay, let's listen.
I am interviewing Dave Moreland. He is from Boone County Emergency Management. Emergency Management, is it director or?
It's actually coordinator.
Coordinator. How long have you been the coordinator for Boone County?
I've been there 9 years. I've been involved in law enforcement for about 26 years. Also in emergency medical services for approximately 20 years. And so between the two kind of gives me an idea of what it takes on an emergency scene and that type of thing.
What do you do? What is your job? description?
Well, my primary job is to develop emergency plans for the county as a whole. That includes all the incorporated cities. Boone County only has one emergency management coordinator, and that's me. And so I develop emergency plans, anything from responding to like a large car accident to a disaster, terrorism, bomb threats, mitigation type plans to prevent flooding and that type of thing. So,
what concerns do you have for Boone County? What are some of the issues that you find are special problems?
It really depends on the day. That's one of the things I like about my job is that each day is different. Weather or car accidents or hazardous material spills, those types of things, it's always different. And, you know, probably one of the biggest threats for Boone County is, like a lot of counties, is transportation incidents, hazardous material spills. We've got the Union Pacific that goes through the county. We've got, you could say, three major highways that go through there that have a lot of trucks that are transporting different types of chemicals or fuels or that type of thing. And so that and severe weather is probably the most threat for the county itself. It could happen any time of the day, and you just never know where it's going to happen. I also deal with special events, so if you have a large event going on, you could have perfectly good weather and still have lots of things that you have to deal with. Let's say we're having a large city celebration and it's extremely hot, like this summer, you could end up with a lot of ambulance calls or heat-related incidents. So it could be a perfectly good day, but you're still busy in my field. I'm on call 24/7. I've always been in the public service arena with law enforcement, and I'm a certified paramedic. With my past experience, I've been on a lot of really bad things, and I've seen what works and what doesn't work as far as trying to handle those types of incidents. And so, you know, I've always been passionate about helping people, trying to protect people. You know, that's really a big part of my job. The majority of my job is public safety. That's what I really like to do.
Can you give us an example of how the emergency management has helped people or helped someone?
I just recently got a new mobile command unit. If our communication center would get struck by a tornado or fire, or they'd lose all their power for some reason or another, you'd actually have two dispatch center people working out of that mobile command.
Have you ever had to use it in a real emergency where people were?
Several times.
Several times? So
yes.
It's really come into.
Yes, and that's one reason why I purchased this newer one, is because it's a lot larger than the one I had. And we found out on a couple different real incidents that we needed more space inside for a conference room so that we could bring in all the main players that are involved, and we can sit down as a group and really iron out what needs to be done and what, and organize that effort. They call us coordinators, and that's really what we do when it comes to a disaster or, you know, some type of large incident that involves a lot of people and a lot of different agencies. If you need additional manpower or additional equipment or some type of additional resources, we usually have a pretty good idea where to get that. And so they utilize us kind of like a logistics type officer. The biggest complication during an incident is communication, whether it's mouth-to-mouth or whether it's using your radios or telephones. There's always a communication problem. Everybody, every coordinator in the state has difficulty with communications at some point. And so that's always something that we're trying to improve. There's still the idea out there that it's not going to happen to me, or it's not going to happen to our county. It can happen. What are they going to do if their house burns down or catches fire in the middle of the night? How are you going to get the kids out? You know, a lot of times you end up going out different directions from the house. Well, where are you going to meet so that you make sure that everybody's there? Let's say something happened to me and my family in Iowa, and I have a family member that lives in California. I may list them as an emergency contact person for my family. I could call them and say, the family's fine, the house is gone, but we're fine. And then everybody from your family calls them to get the update rather than trying to get a hold of you or trying to get the Red Cross.
That sounds like a great idea. This has been Cynthia McClure with Dave Moreland from the Boone County Emergency Management. Phone number is 515-433-0592. And if you wanted to reach him via website, it's boonecounty.gov.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, sir.
We've been speaking today about emergency preparedness, and I've been here with Don Wirth and Cynthia McClure, and I'm Ursula Rudenberg. September is Emergency Preparedness Month. It is so called because of the September 11 attack in 2001. We've been speaking with Keith Morgan, who is the Story County Emergency Manager Coordinator and Management Coordinator. To find out information about emergency preparedness in Story County, go to Story County's website, which is storycountyiowa.gov. That's all full words, storycountyiowa.gov. And look under departments and go to the Emergency Management section for information about preparedness, as well as how to volunteer to help out if you're interested in doing that. We also spoke with Captain Van Ryswick, who is the commander of the patrol division at Iowa State University. And the website at Iowa State is iastate.edu. That's iastate.edu. And you can search the website for information about shelters in times of bad weather and also about emergency preparedness information. Also, during an emergency itself, that website's homepage will provide necessary information. We spoke with Clint Miller, who's the emergency coordinator for the Amateur Radio Emergency Service in Story County. And if you're interested in finding out about the National Association for Amateur Radio or becoming an amateur radio operator, go to ARRL.org, ARRL.org. We spoke with Phil Queen from Hamilton County Emergency Management Coordination. And the website in Hamilton County for information about emergency management, including Rural Domestic Preparedness Consortium, which is an organization for training volunteers to be first responders. Go to their website, hamiltoncounty.org. That's the full words, hamiltoncounty.org, and look under emergency management. And finally, we spoke with Dave Marlin from Boone County Emergency Management Coordination, and their website is co.boone.ia.us. That's co.boone.ia.us. And if you look under the department section, you see there's emergency management section, which has information, anything from weather to volunteering for being part of the search and rescue group. Emergency managers from Polk County and Marshall County also reinforced that probably the best website for finding a list and information about how you can be prepared and how you can prepare emergency kits in your home, go to FEMA.gov. That's FEMA.gov. Cynthia?
Oh, and I received some nice information from Tom Reese, who is the Skywarn coordinator, and he gave me the information to a website if you are interested in volunteering and becoming part of the Skywarn program. That's MidIowaSkywarn.com. That's MidIowaSkywarn.com.
And again, Skywarn is an organization for people who inform the Weather Service about inclement weather.
Yes, Skywarn is a volunteer program run by the National Weather Service to receive reports of severe weather from the public for the purpose of advising the public about impending danger due to severe thunderstorms, tornadoes, and floods, and other hazardous weather conditions. So if you'd like to become a volunteer, please check out their website at midiowaskywarn.com.
Hopefully this information has been helpful. It certainly has been very informative to me. The message that is loud and clear is that when there's an emergency, the first responders are going to be overwhelmed with responsibilities as well as possibly being affected themselves by the emergency. So it's very important that every one of us be prepared to take care of ourselves for the first 3 days, to have the supplies, and again, for information about how to do that, the website of the Homeland Security Department, FEMA, FEMA.gov, gives a complete list about how to do that. Thank you very much for listening today and for joining us on Local Talk. The music you heard today was provided by Creedence Clearwater Revival, Bad Moon Arising, Cynthia's Choice.
Yes, definitely.
And the theme song, as always, is from our own Al Harris and Tom Richards, backtracking from their CD, The Ballad of Kate Shelley. Thank you for listening, and see you again on the radio.